Coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios. The Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report. Here's your host, Randy Bergen, with Coach Rick Cleveland and Coach Mark Lasseter.
And good Saturday morning to you, and welcome to another edition of the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report, coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios, located right here in South Alabama. So glad to have you with us on a beautiful Saturday morning. Thank you for letting us be a part of your Saturday morning. Love it. Love it. A lot of good stuff going on. I'm looking at two guys. I have not seen them. Well, I haven't seen Rick. Rick's been Coach Cleveland back in the house. He's fresh back from Montana. Mark, I got to tell you, I had a lot of folks last week say they enjoyed the show with me and you on Southern Fairways. We had a big time.
We did have a big time. The dude catching the fish. I'm telling you.
Rick, did you hear that?
That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Doug Maines.
That's happened before with us. You seem to have some kind of thermometer of when to call.
And I do. And he's going to get that invoice because It seems like he's not catching anything until we call him. And then all of a sudden, get them lines in. So, but no, it was a lot of fun. So, hey, the Three Musketeers back together. Good to see you. Rick, how was your trip to Montana?
It was absolutely the most breathtaking views I've ever seen in my life. I can't even describe it. Just can't even describe it.
I've read so many books about the early mountain men in Montana.
Yeah.
You know, and talked about the different things that they saw, and they describe it.
Yeah.
And then Rick sent pictures of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy cow,
that's
on my bucket list. I'm telling you, that's a place I'm going before D-Day. I'm going there.
D-Day. Well, we are going to face D-Day.
That's for sure. All right.
Gentlemen, it is I've been really fortunate as a young kid, a middle-class kid from Sylacauga, Alabama, to go to a lot of beautiful places around not only this country but around the world, hitting that little round tennis ball, and I'm telling you, there's nothing like it. Guys, why go anywhere in the world to do that except right here? We got the most beautiful places. Glacier National Park is just absolutely unbelievable. And you know what, guys? Tracy told me that they're expecting about 8 inches of snow this weekend.
Wow.
You got out of there just in time.
Oh, wow.
No, that was some beautiful pictures you sent. That'd be a place I'd like to go visit, no doubt. Hey, big show lined up. We got a lot going on. In our second hour, Josh Niblett is going to be on with us and part of our Legend series. And I got to tell you, when you talk to Josh Niblett, your ears perk up, right? Because he's got some good stuff.
Yeah, we've said this before, but he's a visionary. He really is, and he's faith-based. I mean, it's all about helping young men and women become better husbands, fathers, mothers, and wives. And I'm telling you, there ain't no show to that. It's fact. And at 14 years at Hoover, 6 state championships, and he won one at Aniana.
Yeah.
You know, in 2004.
People forget about that one.
And he inherited a program there that was not very good. And he's fun, guys. You don't want to miss Josh Niblett, I can promise you.
That'll be a lot of fun. Coach, how you been doing, Mark?
Man, doing great. Just had another week at football workouts and practicing a little bit and getting things going. It's just been a lot of fun, and I feel like that our program is just really moving well, moving forward. And Coach Trotter's got kids out having about 35 a day at workouts, and then the middle school comes in, so it runs us through a pretty good morning, and then we start watching film and putting notes in, and all these young guys, they get on that film and they get on there and they start typing stuff in. Next thing you know, it's all on your phone. It's just amazing how things are. You can go on your phone and look at the film from that day, and then notes you put in about guys got to work on. So before they come to the next workout or in practice, or, you know, they come in and they've already got corrections about what they did wrong or reinforcement of what they did well. So it's pretty cool.
This AI stuff is crazy.
Guys, what is all that?
I mean, that is the future.
That is the future.
I mean, we were looking at something while we're in Montana on my phone with a little bit of internet that we got, and there were bridges falling in, and cars falling in, and people walking the bridge and falling in.
What?
Yeah, but it's not real. It's that AI stuff. And ships running into each other, cruise ships.
You can do just about anything on it.
Well, boy, I.
You know, the thing about it is, we're all going to have to learn how to use it in a way that is good, in a way that it can help you. Like you can, if you need to write something, you can use AI and tell them what the topic is, and it'll list outline notes for you, and you go in there and take out what you want and use whatever you want or don't want.
I got a teacher from UMS that told me that she can type in a chat box and get that.
Yeah.
And get the most up-to-date information on whatever subject they're talking about right now. And you know, if teachers are doing that, students can do that. That's a great learning tool. But, wow.
It's great, but we also have to watch. It's artificial intelligence. Yeah. And what we have to be careful of is what's real, what's not, what is truthful, what is a lie, and decipher all that. Yeah. That's where we are in our world today. So if we can do that, we'll be all right.
You know, and you said something a little bit earlier. I got a few minutes left here in this segment, but you said something a little bit earlier that is we got to get away from this negativity that's going on. It seems like there's a lot of hate. Everybody's mad at each other.
Yes, it does to me. I mean, I watched it. I brought it up when I came in. You know, just look at what you see when you turn on the news.
Yeah.
When you turn on the news, we got hate in our country, in our state, in our cities. I mean, groups of people hate one another because of their political beliefs.
Yeah,
that is
wrong.
So wrong.
Yeah.
But that's just the way it is, and it's disgusting to me. And it's led us to this situation where right now, and then there's religions that hate one another, there are countries that hate one another. And, I mean, we're on the brink of war in places around the world, and, you know, it just puts everybody on edge. And I'm like, we have allowed our religious beliefs that our country was founded upon, in God we trust, have let that go.
Yeah.
And we're just, man is doing it. And if you go back, Rick, you know this better than I do. You go back and look through history.
Yeah.
Most great civilizations throughout history crumbled from within.
Yeah.
That's where they crumbled.
Imploded. They imploded. Right.
Exactly. And it's the same thing that I'm not saying our country's crumbling, but I'm saying I see the framework of really bad things ahead.
Yeah. Look at the book of Ezekiel.
Yeah, so,
that's a testimony what you just said there. The book of Ezekiel tells that. Clay just sent a text that says, "Don't watch the news, guys. It's filled with hate and lies."
That's there it. You go.
And
he's right,
and I believe that. I do.
Well, let's turn to something a little bit more positive.
Yeah, let's
all
do
right.
that.
Former Theodore great C.J. Mosley,
player.
After 11 years, played at the University of Alabama. Of course, started Theodore Bobcats and. Goes. He's going to retire.
Yeah.
Going to retire after 11 years in the NFL.
And what an amazing career he's had. I mean, just an absolutely amazing career. And he's better in the locker room than he has been on the field because he's been injured.
Yep.
And
right.
don't think that those guys don't keep those people in that locker room after 10 years or so, even though they're injured. You know, there's Mr. Lawson. He's in there. And just encouraging, and getting on their fanny when he needs to
That's
get
right.
on. So kudos. That's a good point, Randy, because he is some kind of football player and human being.
Yeah, well. No doubt. Over 1,000 tackles in the NFL.
He's fun to watch play.
He was big at Alabama.
He was fun to watch play. I won't ever forget that LSU game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the national championship, he gets his hip dislocated. Remember that?
Yeah.
And but before that, he was all over the field.
Yeah.
And but then he comes back from that hip dislocation. Some people never come back from that. He comes back the next year and has a great year and ends up going playing in the NFL for a
guy we're going to talk about a little later on didn't come back from it. It ruined his career. That would be one Bo Jackson.
That's correct.
That's exactly right. Yeah. All right, let's take our first time out. When we come back, we've got more to get into right here on the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report.
Welcome back to the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report, brought to you by Alpha Insurance. This segment presented by Green and Phillips Attorneys at Law. Now back to the show.
I seen your picture. Your name in lights above it.
There it is, right there.
That's got Mark's name all over it.
Picture in the post office.
That's it.
Please turn to the left.
Smile.
Smile for the camera. All right. Hey, welcome back to the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report. I was almost in the 10 o'clock hour there for a second. Coach, as we get older, we start losing a lot of our friends. And certainly lost one this week.
Yeah, we did. And you'll have to excuse me because – I may get a little emotional here, Mark. Reuben Grant and our friend Ben Thomas, who really, to me, is so very similar to Reuben Grant in so many ways. Reuben Grant wrote high school sports stories for the Birmingham Post-Herald for 25 years. And I don't know that I have ever been around a gentleman that actually – and Ben said it better. He wrote with genuine honesty. And his desire was to shine a positive light on young people in a world that is too often challenging, cruel, and critical for any age.
Yes.
Heck, Mark, his stories, Randy, his stories affected people. I mean, if they hit you in the heart. And, you know, I can remember Reuben coming into our office at Banks High School. And David wasn't it. David was in the office dealing with some problem. And Reuben just sat down, and it was like – and I remember it so vividly because he started talking about a young man – from Sylacauga, and I didn't know he knew I was from Sylacauga, but he started talking about him, and he was just building him up and saying, you know, all these good things about him. And so when David came in, I just listened to him and listened to them talk. Everything he said was positive. Never heard a word negative coming out of his mouth. Mark, he interviewed you.
He did, when I was very, very young. I was at Hewitt Trustful Junior High School. Back then, the Birmingham News used to put, like on a Wednesday, they would have little stuff in there about junior high. Back then, it was junior high.
Yeah.
And they would have little junior high clips. Well, back then, at Hewitt Trustful Junior High, our wrestling team was, I was so fortunate. It was one of the best around. And in 3 years that I was there, we went 30-2 and won three county championships. And after one tournament, we were at Homewood, and we won every single match in the first two rounds. Every kid we had went out to the semifinals. It was a really good team. We just had a great tournament. Yeah. Ended up winning the tournament. And Reuben called me and wanted to do an interview. He called me. I'm a little old podunk guy. I was 23 years old. And he called me by name, just as he says, I just want to talk about you. I heard about your wrestling team. And he goes, tell me about some of those kids. Yeah. And I got to talk about some of those kids on that team. And one of the boys on that team is a kid, is a doctor here in Fairhope. He works in the ER at Thomas Hospital.
Really?
His name is Dr. Parag Mahatakar. And
wow.
Parag wrestled on that team, and he wasn't a starter. He never started.
Yeah.
But he was on our JV team, and he got to wrestle in this tournament. But when I was in the hospital 7 years ago, I went back in the second time. I had a little hiccup, went back in the second time, and the ER doctor standing there was Parag Mahatakar.
Wow.
And he told me, we were talking about that, and I thought about Reuben Grant, when I saw him, he had passed this week, about that article, about that team that Parag was on. And I was like, you know, that guy, Reuben, made a difference in kids' life just by mentioning their name in a paper that is so big. Back when it was the Birmingham News, man.
Yeah.
It was a huge paper.
Yeah.
And but that's the man Reuben Grant was. And that's the kind of guy we all ought to aspire to try to be.
You know, not only was he a great journalist, he was also a licensed Baptist minister.
He was.
And he was not afraid to share the gospel. It was an honor for him to share the gospel and his love for Jesus. And it didn't matter who you were. Little old bitty guys like us as coaches or state senators or national politicians. Boy, I'm just telling you, it is a huge loss. And if anybody ever met Reuben Grant, Ron Ingram was extremely close to him. And they wrote a book together about high school sports. But his passion externally, outside of his faith, was high school sports.
Yeah.
And I don't know of any, you know, now, and that's why Ben to me is so very similar to Reuben. And, you know, it didn't matter the color of a man's skin in those days. And it just, you never heard him talking about the trials and tribulations that he obviously went through
sure
as a child. And, but golly, it's just such a loss for high school sports, for sports writers. I know it's touched Ben's life. I know Ron Ingram's life will not be the same without Reuben. And I'm telling you, there's thousands of coaches that coached in that Birmingham metro area, over the mountain, whatever you want to call it, that have been affected in a positive manner by Reuben Grant.
Yes, sir.
And we certainly send out our condolences to his daughter and his wife and to all the people that he made an impact on their life, because through his penmanship, whatever he wrote, anything under his pen was always full of joy. And you didn't see criticism, you saw praise. And,
right.
If there's ever been a guy that epitomizes what PSR stands for, is building people up, not being a part of tearing them down, it's Reuben Grant.
Absolutely.
Randy, thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, as you talk about him and you listen to these stories, journalism has gone, instead of happy and let's talk about kids in a positive way, everything, what you said earlier, Mark, is going left. It's going negative. Everything's bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, when can we have some, don't you like good news?
Yeah.
Good news?
Every Saturday morning from 8 to 10.
You're going to get it right here.
That's right.
You're going to get it right here.
Yeah. It's just, but you're right, Randy. In everything we turn on, whether it be sporting news or worldly news, is negative. Tracy won't even watch it.
Right.
She refuses to watch it. And what Clay said is exactly right. We watched Designated Survivor. I wish everybody could watch that.
I did too.
Didn't you?
I watched the whole thing.
Isn't it amazing?
Yes.
Isn't it amazing?
He put me on it and I couldn't get off.
Man.
It was awesome.
You got to watch it, Randy.
Right.
I know you don't have a lot of time. You're working about 72 different jobs. But, you know, it showed me that we don't know anything that's going on, truthfully.
No.
We don't.
No.
We don't know anything.
No.
And so, and Clay's turned me on to something, a kind of news that is first faith-based and it tells you the truth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, isn't that wonderful to have your children that turn you on to something that affects your life now at 70 years old?
What happened to news? I mean, I know we're not talking about prep sports right now, but what happened to news? You give me the facts and then let me decide on how I feel about it.
I think the belief is whatever's going to sell.
No, that's it.
It's going to be hate and controversy.
That's it. And getting more people to watch my show because the ratings keep us here.
Right. That's right.
You know, I played golf with Kip yesterday, as you know, and Kip said, you know, my contract's coming up here in April. And, you know.
He's worried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's an executive producer of a large TV station.
Yep. And by the way, had a great time yesterday.
Boy, I'm telling you.
We got to go over and play Tiger Point yesterday. And I got to be honest with you. It was hot.
Mm.
But, man, we had fun.
I knew y'all were having fun. I tried to call, and nobody answered. So I knew. I said, the boys are having fun.
Let me throw it out there real quick, Rick. If you have an opportunity, and you're a golfer, and you want to go play a fun track, a tight, tough track, but a fun track, go to Gulf Breeze and play Tiger Point. It was absolutely a blast. And, by the way, I talked with David Musial down at Glen Lakes.
Yeah.
You know, we played there a couple of weeks ago. The greens, he said, the greens are a little off. Dude, they are much better.
Good.
So if you want to play somewhere close, go to Glen Lakes and see David Musial down there.
That's good. We got a group going down there today. Yeah. I think there's a group.
No, they went yesterday.
They went yesterday?
Yeah, instead of today.
Okay.
Because of our tournament tomorrow.
Okay, good. Well, and another guy, David Musial.
Oh.
You talking about a prince of a man? Just a prince of a man. And there's never a time that you or Joey don't set something up for us that it's not a fabulous time.
Oh, yeah. And by the way,
another guy that loves children.
Oh, yeah.
David Musial.
That's right.
He loves him.
And his great uncle, Stan the Man.
Stan the Man. Whew.
Yep.
I'll tell you a story about that. You want me to?
Yeah.
Why don't you do it when we come back? Can you hold that thought?
I can hold it.
You hadn't been doing that all.
Yeah. That's rough.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Inside joke there. All right. When we come back, more of the Thompson Tractor Press Sports Report.
Welcome back to the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report, brought to you by Alpha Insurance. The Boudreaux's Cajun Grill communication lines are open at 251-343-0106. Now, back to the show.
Man, that's some good stuff right there. Hey, welcome back to the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report. I am Randy Bergen, along with Coach Rick Cleveland and Coach Mark Laster. We are so happy that you're with us on a beautiful Saturday morning. Man, we're just rolling through. I guess yesterday was the first day of summer, I guess. And, boy, it felt like it if you were outside.
And we were really lucky. We were getting a breeze, too.
Yeah,
getting a real breeze.
Man, we needed it.
Yeah.
Could you imagine playing yesterday with no breeze?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
And we'll hopefully be the same way tomorrow. At
Lost Key.
For
the Southern Fairways Golf Tour. Two-man event.
Yeah.
It's birdies at the beach. We're excited about it. If you're playing, those of you that are signed up and that are playing, which we have 116, I think.
Cool.
So you're going to love the trophy. You will want the trophies for your team, but I digress. Hey, Coach, you know, we talked about C.J. Mosley, the great player at Alabama, of course, played at Theodore High School. There's some great athletes that have come out of the great state of Alabama.
You know, Randy, what we try to do every summer is we kind of do a lot of reflection on the past, and we do a legend series that, you're going to love today's legend series. You get a chance to hear Josh Niblett, and his story is a little bit different from a lot of people.
Right.
But I was thinking, get asked this question a bunch, and listen, I was eating a snack at Nukes the other day, and a gentleman came up, and he said, "Aren't you on the radio?" I said, "I'm just so glad you can't see us. I don't have a radio voice," but he was so complimentary of you and Mark and myself. And believe me, that means the world to us, because we certainly don't do it for any remuneration. It's just more.
Got that
it's,
right.
it's a love for the games that we've coached and played. And but I started thinking about, because we get this question all the time. Coach, tell me who the very best one you ever saw in any sport. Yeah. I said, what sport? Which one do you want to? And I always say this guy, Vincent Jackson. Now, most of you don't know Vincent Jackson, yep, but you do know him as Bo.
That's right.
And, Randy, I don't think I've ever seen anybody that could do the things that he could
incredible.
Do.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
You know, you watch him with the Kansas City Royals. I think the my favorite picture of Bo is when he runs up on the outfield fence. He makes a catch, runs up on the outfield fence, and runs back down the outfield fence, throws the ball home. And another time, he made a catch in the outfield, and he throws a runner out. He was deep in center field and threw a runner out. It may have been left field, I'm not sure. But he threw a runner out, the guy that's now an analyst on Baseball Tonight. And he could not – unbelievable, threw a strike to home plate. I personally saw him – I was umpiring what we used to have, the East-West ball game.
Right.
And we played it at Rickwood.
Bo Birmingham.
Yeah, and Bo – he hit a ball, and I didn't know who Bo Jackson was at that time. He hit a baseball so far, I don't even think they found it yet. I mean, and then you look at all the things he did at Auburn and all the things he did for the Oakland Raiders and for the Kansas City Royals. Just the most phenomenal. I mean, he's in our lifetime, he was a generational player. I think he's the best overall athlete I've ever seen.
Well, two things. Coming up in our 10 o'clock show, Southern Fairways, Big 89 is going to be here.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about Bo Jackson because he says, hey, I tackled him. Y'all don't know that, but I tackled him. He didn't jump over me. Okay, so we're going to hear that story at 10 o'clock.
Yep.
But, you know, in 1991 is whenever he had that hip injury, yep, right? Had he not had that, where do you think he would be? And obviously he would be retired right now, but in the annals of sports, where would he be ranked? Got to be one of the best athletes to have ever played football and baseball.
To me, he would be in both Hall of Fames. I mean, he would certainly be in most Hall of Fames. A story was told, and I heard Bo Jackson tell this story. He was walking in Toomer's Corner. He was walking in Toomer's Corner, and when the USFL was founded, a gentleman, he said, in a really nice suit, walked up to him, and he said, "Sir, I have permission to ask you if you would leave Auburn University for $8 million and come play in the USFL. Bo Jackson said, "No, I can't do that to Coach Dye.
Wow.
I can't do that to my teammates. I and he stutters a little bit, and he said, I'm loyal to a fault to my coach and my teammates." Now, $8 million is like he said, I needed that money really, really bad.
And that was in the mid-80s, 1984, 85.
Money.
Yeah, that's a lots and lots of money for him to say no to. And for a little boy from Bessemer, Alabama, that didn't live in the – he lived in the probably one of the worst parts of that area.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that tells you a lot about that man right there. And
played high school ball at McAdory.
He sure did. Played it for Dickie – goodness gracious.
Atchison.
Dickie Atchison. That's right. Yep, he sure did. He's something. Mark, I want you to tell us that story about Stan Musial or David Musial, whoever you were telling us about.
I just remember when I was a young kid in St. Louis, you know, Stan Musial was a Cardinal.
Yeah.
You know, for most of his career, I think it was the majority or all of his career. But I remember my dad telling me that Stan Musial was – my dad is a big baseball fan.
Yeah.
Love baseball. And there's a statue of Stan Musial outside the old Cardinal Stadium.
Right.
In St. Louis. And I was asked, I said, "Who's Stan Musial, Dad?" And so he told me.
The man.
He said, "Son, he's probably one of the best pure hitters that there has ever been in baseball." And I said, what do you mean by pure hitter? He says, there wasn't a pitch he couldn't hit.
Wow.
I go, what do you mean by that? He goes, didn't matter who was throwing it, didn't matter what they threw, he could hit any pitch, anytime he wanted, anytime he had to. And he said, but the greatest thing that people talk about Stan Musial was that Stan Musial was one of the most humble and kind people. Now, when he played the game, he played it to win. He's going to play hard-nosed like everybody did back in the 60s, you know. But at the same time, when the game was over, it was time to be a gentleman again.
Yeah.
And that's the way he lived his life. And when Dad told me that story, I was sitting there thinking, that's he. My dad told me stories about old baseball players.
Yeah.
Ted Williams.
Yeah.
Told me stories about Ted. He said Ted Williams in a game one day was standing at home plate getting ready to bat, and he called timeout, told the umpire, said the pitcher's mound, is the rubber's off. It's not in line
not
with
centered.
The play, not centered. Yeah. And he wouldn't bat. They finally went out there and missed. Sure enough, it was 6 inches off. Now, how in the world can he tell that? But Dad was telling me, he says, because Ted Williams, one of his greatest assets was his eyesight.
Yeah.
He had great eyesight. He could see the baseball.
Yeah.
And another pure hitter. Just one of the guys who, he came to the plate, tough out every time he came there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love story. When I hear about David Musial and Stan Musial, I think about that time, what my daddy told me about that. And those, it's funny how those stories that your dad tells you stick with you. You know, for all these years I've thought about, he said, there's no pitch he couldn't hit. I'll never forget that.
You know, David played a lot of golf with Stan. And he talked about, and Rick, we talk about this, and you don't know this, but we always talk about you around the greens or putting because of your soft hands. I guess probably because of the tennis you played.
It's got to be.
But with Stan the man, David talks about his hands were so soft, okay, and the way he putted, the way he chipped. And they played a lot of golf together.
Yeah.
And just he's got all these stories. But if you ever go to Glen Lakes, go in and see David Musial and just say, can you tell me a story about your great uncle?
Oh, that's awesome.
And he has a lot of Cardinal fans that drive down just to see his jersey in there to start off with and then to talk to David.
Man. You
know, David's a good dude.
Well, he is. He's one of the finest that we've got in our golf game.
There's no doubt.
And you put him and Bobby Hall together.
Yeah.
I mean, we're so blessed here on the Eastern Shore to have Bobby Hall.
We're going to have another one on the show at 10 o'clock. Another great pro around here. Ray Schuessler is going to be on with us.
Ain't no doubt.
No doubt.
Well, I'm telling you, he's
and his daddy's pretty big.
His daddy was something special, I can tell you that. But we've had a lot of great athletes, and I know we've all – Jeff Rutledge. Jeff Rutledge was a heck of a high school quarterback, of course, but he was also a great – he would have been drafted in baseball. He was a point guard in basketball. I mean, just a great player. And the night that his Banks Jets, who were loaded with SEC players, I think 8 or 9 of those kids, they played Woodlawn and Tony Nathan. Well, that was a sight to see, boys. I'm telling you, only one gate opened at Legion Field. And that, you know, just a phenomenal. And I didn't know this. Simpson Pepper, who was the voice.
Voice of Legion Field.
And of the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa for years. When you were in school there, he was the voice. You know, he coached at Inslee. Simpson Pepper coached at Inslee. He was a B-team baseball coach for Phil English, who later went on to
Hewitt
and to he was at Huffman before
he, was at Huffman before he went to Hewitt.
Right, and probably one of the legendary baseball coaches. But I didn't know that about
Simpson was also a deacon in my daddy's church.
Is that right?
At Central Park Baptist Church there in Inslee.
Just what an amazing and a tremendous athlete.
Yeah,
a tremendous high school athlete, and he was also an administrator in the school system. But boy, that voice was something. Boy, when you walked into Legion Field or to Bryant Denny,
you recognized.
Yeah, I mean, there's Mr. Pepper.
Yep.
Yeah, just a fabulous – and, I mean, people like that have just changed. You know, they laid the foundation for us to have a tremendous, tremendous high school athletic programs. I think of Bubba Scott. I think about Dan Washburn, those guys and what they did. And then what Steve did. And, you know, we've just been so blessed. But great athletes, We talked about C.J. Mosley earlier. And, Randy, you saw some great athletes in Prattville, too.
No.
I mean.
Listen, we've seen, with all the football we've done, play-by-play and all that, all the good athletes we've seen.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
CJ was good. AJ McCarron. Mark Barron. I mean, there's a list of them, okay, that you could just name, just go right.
Off that one team, there was Desmond Hood.
Yeah.
I mean, he played
Preston Dial.
Played in the pros.
Preston was UMS,
right.
Yeah.
Sure was.
So, anyway, all right, good stuff. All right, we'll take a time out when we come back. Coach, you have got the leadership segment right here on the Thompson Tractor Press Sports Report.
Man.
Welcome back to Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report. Randy Bergen, along with Coach Mark Laster and Coach Rick Cleveland. Of course, we got the leadership segment coming up in just a second, but I do want to mention we got some great sponsors of the show. One that we have all used for sure is Premier Collision. Now, they've got two locations in Mobile, 1177 Sledge Drive, right there, not far from the Bel Air Mall.
They have closed the other one.
It's
just one now.
So give them a call if you've got a ding in your car to a major wreck. You can give them a call and they'll certainly take care of you at 251-478-4500. And Mark, I know you even said that you're driving today. You're driving that car that they fixed for you, right? No. Which
not
one?
Not today.
You? Not today?
I got a car. I bought a car from my dad.
Oh, okay.
But I'm sure it'll be there at some point in time. It'll be something.
I hope it stays in a great shape. We don't have to take it over there for a while.
Okay.
If something happens to it, I know where I'm taking it.
They'll take good care of you, won't they?
People. Absolutely will.
Absolutely. Go see Chris Garrison's great staff there at Premier Collision.
Good people. And, you know, guys, we don't have a long time in this segment, but one of the things that's really – happening in high school sports is unacceptable behavior. And, you know, we got a real struggle, guys. We don't have enough officials to call just about any sport, whether it be lacrosse, which is not really a recognized sport in this state or national federation-wise yet, but you're looking at soccer, you look at all the things going on in the spring. But really, you look at football and basketball and baseball, we're having to play a lot of games on Thursday night, so we'll have enough officials for Friday night. And they're doubling up, and it's a problem. And what I want to talk about this morning on leadership segment, brought to you, of course, by GoPest, and we certainly appreciate everything that GoPest does around our community. And if you've got some pest problems, please give GoPest a call. They will be Johnny on the spot and do everything they can to fix it for you. A subsidiary of 68 Ventures, who's, boy, always got great things going on. We appreciate
always
Nathan and that whole team and what they do at 68 Ventures. But my question to you guys is this. What do we do about this unacceptable behavior that's coming more from the fans? And we do have coaches that, and Mark, I need to take a slap just right between the eyes. I wasn't the very best to officials as a young man, but as we got older, I think we both of us learned a great deal, and I'm thankful for that. But this has got to stop, guys. We got to stop all this rude behavior to officials. And what is the solution to that? We never talk about something on here that we don't try to give a solution. I'm going to give the first solution. I think we need to start having an elective in college. I even go back to high school. When we have rainy days in PE, I wish we would sit children down and have coaches of the sports, either in or out of season, challenge those students to be officials once they leave the game. What better background is there than to get a young man who played high school and college baseball or just high school baseball to become an official? You know, that keeps them in the game. Basketball the same way. Football the same way. I don't know the answer to it.
I don't either, Rick. And I, you know, it doesn't start in high school.
No.
It starts in Little League.
Yeah.
And all the Little League sports is where it should, you know, I see these horror stories on YouTube of parents and coaches getting into it with officials and it becoming physical. And little kids are sitting there watching that. And I'm like, good Lord. I remember as a kid, my dad, we had pulled up to play a baseball game and we had just gotten there. And there was an argument going on with his father and a umpire. And the father had gotten so mad, he was chasing the umpire off the field. The umpire was trying to get in his truck, and the dad grabbed him and had a baseball bat in his hand. And I was sitting there watching that. And now this was back in the early 70s, okay? Yeah. But it's, you know, and you're going to have people – when you get people together like that, you're going to have that problem. But I do believe that the High School Athletic Association, the National Federation, has tried to set some guidelines to go by. And it may start, I don't know, and nobody's going to want to hear me say this, I can just tell you. But until we sit parents down, just like we sit coaches down, coaches have to sit in meetings and go over these PowerPoint presentations or video presentations done by the National Federation about sportsmanship.
Yeah.
Until we set parents down and until they pass the class, I'm not sure they ought to be coming to the games. And I don't, that may be too far, Rick. That may go too far. But we've got to make something, because I'm telling you, I wouldn't tell any of my kids, you need to go be an umpire. You need to go be a referee.
Well,
why would I want my kids subjected to that type of behavior?
Well, we've got to do better, and we must do better. You know, the National Federation has this slogan called bench bad behavior. And really, in essence, what it's saying is enough is enough.
Right.
Enough is absolutely enough. And, you know, it's not just – now, listen, it's not just fans and not just coaches. It's players too.
Yeah.
And until we have coaches that have the intestinal fortitude to take, you know, an all-state player, a draft choice, or somebody that thinks they don't have to adhere to the way we treat officials, you know, we got to stop it.
Yeah. And my little input on that is, okay, you got a warning, okay? This is your first and only warning. If it happens again, you will be banned as a parent coming back to this park or field or whatever.
I love that.
Okay?
I love that.
As a player, this is your only warning. We will not have this. And the problem is we've let discipline fade away. There's no discipline anymore. And part of that is when you were going to school, I can promise you this, Mr. McDaniel, when I heard him call me over the intercom, Ms. Ponchatrain, could you send Randy Berg into my office? I knew what was about to happen.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
We can't do that anymore. We got to have more discipline. Kids want discipline. Mark, you said it all the time. Kids want discipline.
They do.
And I'll tell you what else. When you heard that, your name over the intercom, not only you knew you was in trouble then, but it's going to be an hour later. When you got home, it was going to be reinforced.
Twice as bad.
That's right.
You knew whenever he said, hey, assume the position, you know what's about to happen here.
Well, enough is enough. Parents, treat the officials the way you want to be treated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, are y'all ready? Josh Niblett's going to be with us right here.
Coming to you live, the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha. Here's your host, Randy Bergen, with Coach Rick Cleveland and Coach Mark Lasseter.
Your Prep Sports Report coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios, located right here in South Alabama. So glad to have you with us this morning. I am Randy Bergen, along with Coach Mark Laster and Coach Rick Cleveland, and it is time for our Legend Series. And Rick, we got a legend right here, brother.
Yeah, and one of our favorite folks here at PSR over the years, Josh Niblett, has been a friend and a regular guest on this show. And after 14 years at Hoover, 6 state championships, he retired from the state of Alabama and now is in Gainesville, Georgia, as the head football coach of the Red Elephants. And, Josh, welcome back to PSR, pal.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate you guys having me on, man. It's a pleasure, always a pleasure, and always look forward to this. So anytime I get an opportunity to be on with you guys, man, it's a blessing. So thanks for having me on.
Well, Josh is the son of a high school football coach, a very successful football coach, John Niblett, and his mom, Brenda, and talking about fine people. You just, Josh, I kind of want to start this off. We're going to go all the way through it, but after quarterbacking at Demopolis Academy, you went to Southern Miss for a year, and you said, "I think I want to transfer." If the transfer portal would have been active in those days, you'd have been a number in it.
Yeah.
So, kind of talk about that journey that took you to Hattiesburg, and then pretty quickly on over to Tuscaloosa.
Well, I mean, it kind of started out when I was in high school, which, you know, I thought all along when I was a junior, going to be a senior, like especially my junior year, like Florida State was recruiting me heavy, and so I thought, man, I'm going to go to Florida State. That's where I want to go. And then, but growing up, a boy in Alabama, I mean, you've always saw yourself after you watch, you know, all the greats at quarterback for Alabama, and you know, from Joe Namath to Rutledge to, you know, like Ken Coley. I mean, I can throw out some names to you. You know, Mike Shula, David Smith. I mean, like, all those guys, you're like, you know what? I think I want to play at Alabama. And Alabama recruited me hard in high school, and as long also Southern Miss and some other places. But, you know, it kind of came down to Alabama had offered another quarterback, and that quarterback took it. And so the week before my official visit to Alabama, you know, I committed to Southern Miss, and you know, that was that year that I was going to sign was the year after Brett Favre finished. So I think they played in what used to be called the All-American Bowl in Birmingham, and I think he finished playing for them in January, and I signed in February. So, you know, I had a lot of high aspirations for what I wanted to be able to do there, and I really felt like it was a good fit for me because, you know, we threw the ball around a lot in high school, so probably a lot more than a lot of other people did. I mean, you could almost say we're a little bit more of a run and shoot than we were anything. So, but when I got there, my first day of camp as a freshman, when it was just us freshmen, they got me working on, you know, inside beer steps. And I'm like, wow, this is different. So I was like, well, never mind. So, you know, I mean, not that I haven't never ran any kind of outside beer or something like that, but for us, that was just kind of a change-up token that, you know, my dad would throw in there. But that wasn't our offense. So it was triple option was what they had implemented after Brett finished. And I think they did it because of a shortage of quarterbacks that maybe were not those guys that could just push the ball down the field vertically. And they had guys that were probably a little bit better athletes. And so that's kind of the way it went. And then we get in the first fall camp, preseason, and quarterbacks were live. And three quarterbacks got concussions in the first scrimmage. So one never came back from it. And one never came back from it. I mean, he ended up having to play baseball and then having to punt. And he came back and punted. But, like, you know, I'm like the fifth-string guy coming in there because I think they had aspirations of just redshirting me. So
right.
I end up running with the ones during the first scrimmage. And I don't even know half the offense because I've only been there for a week. And long story short, I end up being the backup. And then by the third game of the year, they're like, hey, you're going in third series. So that's kind of the way it worked out for me. And thought I won the job in the spring. But it didn't happen that way. And came back in the fall and had a great summer at home. And, you know, I think I was, as a quarterback, benching like 400 pounds. When I came back and did my strength test, you had to run 12 220s for time there. I mean, I knocked that out of the water. So I was really physically probably the best that I could be from a quarterback position. And I was in a good mindset. And they had signed two freshmen that year. And we got out to camp. I mean, they were running those two freshmen in front of me and the guy that was the starter the year before.
Wow.
And so I'm like, you know, and, you know, say whatever. I mean, heck, that's why I tell guys all the time, I don't have an issue with people transferring because I went through it.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, like now it's just totally different, you know, with the portal. And I think I think people have to think twice. But for me, I was miserable. And I was, you know, I was, my parents had moved from Demopolis where I graduated, well, where I played my senior year, to Phoenix City. So, I mean, you added almost 3.5 hours to that trip to get to Hattiesburg. Yeah. So, but by the time I got home, Coach Stallings had gotten wind of it and called the house. And, you know, and within 4 days later, I'm on the campus at Alabama. So
that's wonderful. And that's where you should have been all the time.
But the best part of the story, though, Rick, the best part of the story is this. So I get to Alabama, and most people probably don't know this, but I wore number 2 in high school. So when Tad, my older brother, played, he wore number 2. I wore number 1. So when he played quarterback, I played receiver. So when he graduated, I wanted to wear number 2. So I wore number 2. When I went to Southern Miss, which is crazy, is the head coach, Jeff Bauer, that became the head coach, he wore number 7 in college, so I wore number 7. Well, when I got to Alabama, I go to the back to get into my locker my first day there, and number 2's hanging up in my locker. I'm like, shoot, boy, I'll tell you what, man, they know what's going on around here, you know. And then I forgot David Palmer's number 2, too. But then the biggest thing I found out was that it was Vanderbilt's quarterback wore number 2. And so – the next 2 weeks of the first team of the year.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm in the eye bone. There, that was when they had 3 backs in scout team. Yeah.
So, yep, you're the scout quarterback
first,
now.
Yeah. So my first year there, I mean, of course I had to sit a year out, but I took every rep at scout team quarterback. And, you know, look, man, I had aspirations to want to play in the NFL, but I wanted to be a coach. I knew what I wanted to do, and I wanted to be a part of something that I could make myself better than everybody around me. And if anybody went through my story, they could understand that going through the ups and downs, but just trying to persevere every day. I think there was 55 guys that walked on. I gave up a full scholarship to go to Alabama. You know, I'm not like some of these guys now where they give up a scholarship and go walk on, right? Or give up a scholarship and get another scholarship. I gave up a scholarship to walk on. And 55 guys that walked on, there was only 2 of us left after 4 years. And, you know, and I take a lot of pride in that.
And you well should. And we're about to come to the end of this first segment. But then we're going to talk about your coaching career. And after you finished at Alabama, you I think you took a job at Jack State, if I'm not mistaken. And I want to talk a little bit about that. And then, of course, your high school career started after that. We'll get into that as we go into this next segment. But, Josh, I do want to tell you this. I want to tell everybody this. Josh is now the head coach at Gainesville High School in Gainesville, Georgia. Already turned that program around. Josh isn't happy with some of the results. And, of course, I keep up with him mostly because that's Clay's only about 15 minutes from him. But Josh, I know that you and your staff have done an amazing job. Now Tad's over there with you. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about your journey all the way from Aniana to Hoover and in this next segment, and then we're going to get into Gainesville. But we're talking to Josh Niblett, the head football coach at Gainesville High School in Gainesville, Georgia.
And Coach, let's not forget at Hoover.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, ain't no doubt. Ain't no doubt. All right, let's take a quick timeout. When we come back, we continue the Legend Series right here on the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report.
Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report. Call or text the Prep Sports Report at 251-343-0106 on the Boudreaux's Cajun Grill communication line. Now, back to the show.
And we welcome you back to the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report. Randy Bergen along with Coach Mark Laster, Coach Rick Cleveland. Our Legend Series continues. We're doing that with Coach Josh Niblett, and he's on our Boudreaux's Cajun Grill guest line. Rick, that's a mouthful.
You know, and you know who that lead-in was just now, don't you?
Yeah.
That was the Eagles.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
You get a chance, you want to go out to Las Vegas and see them. It's a sphere.
It's a sphere.
Yeah.
You enjoyed that, didn't you?
It was a big time. Yeah, it was big time. That was big time for us. This is big time for us, too, to have our friend Josh Niblett on with us on the Legend Series. And, Josh, after you finish at the University of Alabama, you go to Jacksonville State, and they can call it a GA or whatever, but I'm sure your responsibility there was something that you hope to one day get into full time, maybe at the collegiate level. Talk a little bit about Jack State.
Yeah, well, I mean, originally when I came out of the University of Alabama, I thought I wanted to be a college coach, and that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
But, you know, I had an opportunity. I could have stayed at Alabama and GA'd, but I didn't want to coach. I know this is what growing up in a coach's family will do to your mindset is I didn't want to coach guys that I played with because I thought there would be a disconnect of respect. Just because, you know, it's hard for people to see you differently than the way they've seen you for 4 years, especially guys that you play with. So I felt like it was for me. So I went back. I actually went to Selma to Metamucil Christian where my dad was at and my brother. And started a PE curriculum for them. Became the strength coach. I was the defensive coordinator. And then Tad and I coached basketball together and baseball together, which was awesome. And then we had a guy come through from Southern Miss that I played with at Southern Miss that was recruiting. And he's like, hey, we got a restricted earnest tackles and tight ends job, man. You need to call if that's something you'd be interested in. So I called Mike Williams, who was at Southern Miss when I was there, coached running backs there for 9 years. And I called him, and he interviewed three guys and offered me the job, and I felt like that's what God was leading me to do. So I went there and coached tackles and tight ends. Doug Meacham, who was the offensive coordinator for Oklahoma State for TCU for years, you know, him and I were in the same office. I mean, I slept in the field house because I didn't want to sleep in the dorm with the players because I didn't think that's what coaches were supposed to do. So I slept, brushed my teeth in the morning, changed before anybody got there so nobody would know. I did that, and because that was just who I was. And that's why, you know, I felt like my dad had taught me growing up. After the first season, head coach calls me in his office, and he's like, now, mind being that you need to know, I'm taking classes, but I got my own room, and I'm making $6,000. And all of a sudden, after the season's over with, man, he doesn't like what's going on in strength conditioning, so he's like, hey, I want you to be the strength guy. And so, and then be my football ops and administrative assistant to myself and handle all the spiritual work. I'm like, wow, okay. So we're putting all that together. And he said, but I'm not going to pay you what I paid the other guy. And he said, I want you to go home and tell me what you think's fair. So I go home and, of course, come back. And I'm like, certain. He goes, no, I'm going to pay you 19. And I'm like, okay. So 19 to be full-time benefits, all that. So I didn't take classes anymore. So that next year, we go from being 1-10 to 7-4. Probably should have been 8-3. Second best turnaround in Division II football that year. And our kids bought into what we were doing in the weight room. I redid the weight room. I went and bought fabric for the benches, stapled them, did them all myself. Re-put platforms in there, made out of 2x4, just to give kids a sense of pride that this needs to be important. And so the last year we were there, we lost to Sanford, third game of the year. He resigned in the locker room, and you know, here we are, and we're trying to figure out what we got to do. So I go home and tell my wife we got a 1-year-old, and you know, I'm like, hey, December 31st, you got to find a job, but I got 8 more games to coach first. And that's kind of how it all went down. But I would never, ever, like, God sent me to Jacksonville State to find my wife. And but also build some connections and to grow myself from a organizational attention to detail standpoint, how to figure out how to make an impact in kids' lives spiritually, because I was the spiritual guy. And how do I keep carrying that on? There were a lot of things that I did at Jacksonville State that I was allowed to be able to do that would put a lot on my plate that allowed me to grow as a man. I can promise you that.
And so you did find a job. There was a high school job that was open, and in a, my buddy Jimmy Armstrong, I think, was there as a basketball coach, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah. Heck of a ping pong player. Don't play him in ping pong and don't play him on the golf course.
Aniana had been
in a heartbeat. But they had fallen on tough times. And so you go in there and talk a little bit about going into Aniana, and eventually in 2004, you win a blue map.
Well, you know, to get to that spot, man, I worked so much, like, kind of behind the scenes while I was doing what I was doing at Jacksonville, and, you know, just trying to find an opportunity. I mean, I called the mayor. I called big figures that were in the city, and, you know, and who, I mean, I'm sure they were like, well, who's this 26-year-old that's calling us and, you know, like, wanting to be a head coach here? He ain't never even been a head coach, you know? So, but long story short, I knew if I could get an interview, I was the first interview. And, as a matter of fact, I had surgery 5 days before. We don't have to go in depth to what that surgery was, but I was in some serious pain during the interview. Well, I didn't hear nothing for 2 weeks, and I interviewed for a couple other jobs. Well, I get offered two jobs within 30 minutes of each other on the same day, and I just prayed about it. And the superintendent for Aniana said, could you be up here tonight? I'm like, I'm there. I mean, so I put on my shirt and my tie and my suit and got there and got the job. When I first got there, I mean, they were 1-9, 3-7 the 2 years before. Maurice Karkoff, who was a heck of a coach in the state of Alabama, was there for over 14 years. And, you know, it just got to a point to where I don't know if it was just different, right? And so we had to get back to, hey, we got to work hard for this. We got to get some discipline in the program. We got to get kids out. My first year, we went 5-6, had no business being in the playoffs, got beat. The next year we come back, go 7-4, get beat by Colbert County in the first round, which is huge to know. My third group that I had, I knew was going to be special because they came to me and was like, hey, coach, when we go to road games, we want to wear coat and ties. You know, like they wanted to do stuff like that. So that group went 11-2, and we got beat in the third round by Colbert County. The fourth group comes through, and we end up going 13-2. Beat Colbert County in the semifinals, but get beat by Pike County in the finals. And then my last year there, we went 15-0 and won it all and was down by 14 with 10 minutes left to go in the game and came back and scored 21 unanswered to win it. And I can't say enough about that community, players, the impact. Hey, last week on Father's Day, the Saturday before, my quarterback that I had on the honor in 2001, 2, and 3, I was like his father in high school. Him and his family came and spent the day with me here in Gainesville. The connections and the relationships that I built there, I could have stayed there the rest of my career, but there's no way I could have been able to raise my family with what I was making. And my whole ambition was to take care of my wife, and I wanted my wife to be a mother. And so that was always been my goal.
And so a big-time program calls you. And we got about 2 minutes in this segment. We'll get through it pretty quick. You go to Oxford. Bill Burgess, Charlie Maniscalco, all of those guys. Big-time football. Talk a little bit about going there.
Well, and it was huge. I mean, salary-wise, it's not everything. But, I mean, I doubled my pay, you know. And so I had an opportunity to grow, you know, and then grow professionally. And I think that was the biggest thing. We had to make the move to 7A. And I thought we did a really good job of holding our own, to 6A. And I think that was a big deal there for me within that time that I was there. But I thought we had built something special there. And but then got the opportunity when Rush left Hoover and got that chance to go there. And I felt like it was a no-brainer.
Well, and that was a tough time in the sense for you as a new head coach coming in to take Rush Probst's job, to take his place, because there had been some real issues there.
Well, and, they had won, right? I mean, they had won, and you're going to have to keep winning. But I just wanted to win and maybe do it different a little bit, you know? Rush is a friend of mine. And, you know, like I said before, Rush has always been good to me. Rush told me when I was at Aniana, he's like, hey, you'll be the next head coach at Spain Park. Now, he didn't say you'd be the next head coach at Hoover. He said you'd be the next head coach at Spain Park. But, like, you know, Rush saw some things in me. Well, he saw some things in me that, you know, gave me confidence also. And he never big-timed me. And I think that's something to be said. That's why I try not to ever big time coaches is, hey, I'm here to help. Like, man, any way I can help you grow and get to where you want to be, I want to be able to do that, whether they coach with me or they don't. And I thought Rush did a good job of that.
All right, hey, we're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we continue our Legend Series with Coach Josh Niblett right here on the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report.
Now, back to your host, Randy Bergen.
Coach, I got to let that roll right there.
I'm with you. Need to get Josh playing this kind of stuff in that weight room. Dabo's playing it at Clemson.
Little Boss Gags.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
You know who got that going?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't get it going. No? The quarterback that was Andrew? Andrew's out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Hey, welcome back to Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report. Coach, you know, we got Josh Niblett on the line with us on our Boudreaux's Cajun Grill guest line. But before we get back to Josh, got some great sponsors of the show.
Yeah, I want to mention Integrity Roofing and Contracting. And I know we got a great roofer on our show, but this is a person that's a former retired teacher, tennis coach, 19 years in the roofing business, and we're a NAPI finalist this year for Best Roofing Contractor in Mobile. Call Integrity Roofing for any and all of your roofing needs, new construction or replacement, shingles, metal, and tile roofing. Boy, I'm telling you, just good people, and I'm doing that just because she's a friend of mine, and she just wanted to get her, trying to get her name out there a little bit more, and she has done tremendous work everywhere, all over Mobile. Anytime you're, you know, nominated for a NAPI, you're a pretty doggone good business, and we're excited to help Dale Falkenberry, retired teacher and a tremendous tennis coach over at Murphy High School. We're talking to Josh Niblett, and Josh, we're talking about you just taking a job at Hoover, and you know, we played those Rascals 4 years in a row in the state championship game, and Josh, every year when we played them, there was a sign up, that their run-through sign that had already stated that they were that year's state champions, and we just have to be happy being runner-up.
Yeah.
I'm serious. And, boy, you talking about somebody that ticked that ticked me off. My offensive lineman wanted to fight immediately as soon as they got on the field. And, you know, the guy that was the defensive coordinator at the time there was, gosh, help me. He was head football coach, University of Tennessee. Yeah,
Jeremy Pruitt.
Yep. So let's talk about Hoover.
Yeah, and I think I need to tell you this, too. Like, I know I said to everybody that, look, anytime I made a move from whether it was Onion to Oxford, Oxford to Hoover, or Hoover to Gainesville, you know I said it was kind of a no-brainer, but really, those are hard moves. Now, on the outside looking in, a lot of people probably don't see it as a hard move. It's like a necessary move. But, you know, when you build relationships, you know, relationships are bigger than perception. And so, you know, I think a lot of times when you build those connections, it makes it tough. But, you know, when I went to Hoover, I mean, I think that was the biggest thing is Hoover's always been the standard, you know, since 2000 when Rush got there, you know, they were the standard. You know, it was – hey, if you want to win it all, then you got to go through Hoover to win it, you know. And I took a lot of pride in that when I was at Hoover. I tell people all the time, I was there 14 years. We never did not play in the semifinals at least. You know, we won six state championships. We played for nine of them, and we lost two of the three that we lost by 1 point. So, you know, we could have won eight, if not for a couple plays here and there in the semifinals. There's probably only 1 year, the COVID year, to where we lost 12 players the day of the game, that we probably should have made it to the finals and been playing for it every year. But that's a credit to those players and staff that I had and the players that I coached. And not only that, it was the mindset, right? I mean, it was some years you're going to have guys that, are going to go sign and play ball. But the one thing about those guys in that locker room is they had one thing in common in that locker room, and it wasn't scholarships, it wasn't offers, it was let's go win. You know, let's go win, let's leave a legacy for those that come behind us. And I think that's highly important when you're building championship football teams and a championship football program.
You know, Josh, you're often called a visionary and a faith-based visionary. And I'm in Cumming, Georgia, and I'm looking on a refrigerator in my son's garage, and it says the standard. The standard is always the standard. That pretty well sums up a lot of what you believe, too, isn't it?
It is. Well, and the thing people have to understand, and I will tell you guys this. I'm going to give you this nugget today that I'm 53 years old. But I tell people all the time, I'm not 53 years old. I'm 1 year old 53 times. So what I try to do is I try to give a better version of myself every year. What can I learn to make me newer? Like, what can I learn to refresh me, make my mindset right? And I'm doing a book study with the guys right now. I'll tell you a neat story, and I know we don't have much time, but I think this is something that needs to be said on the show for others that are listening out there. So, you know, to know that God leads you in directions that 3 weeks ago, you know, 4 weeks ago, we finished the spring game. Probably didn't play as well as I would have wanted to, but it was a spring game and all that. But it was probably good for us. And I'm about to go to the beach for Memorial Week, and it's the week before, and I'm listening to a podcast. I go run, I listen to podcasts, and Ed Milet's a guy I used to listen for a few years, and then I just kind of got, like, I didn't want to hear it anymore, so I was like, I'm not going to listen to Ed anymore, I'm going to listen to somebody else. Well, but when I went through my library, it said Ed's going to be on with John Gordon. So I get on with him, listen to it, and John's wrote a new book called The Seven Commitments of a Great Team. So as soon as I finished listening to it, I sprint to Books a Million. They say they've got a copy, but they can't find it. I'm about to leave, and the lady goes, I know where it's at. And so she gets it to me. I'm a slow reader, but I read that thing in 3 days, and God kind of put on my mind, hey, look, this is what you're going to take your guys through this summer. You got 8 weeks, well, there's 8 opportunities in this book to teach them. And long story short, I have to meet with a guy that's going to be a sponsor in our program. He says, you know what? I know John Gordon. I was in an investment with him. I was like, you're crazy. 2 days later, John Gordon calls me on the phone. And I'm talking to him. And we talked for 15 minutes, which would probably cost anybody $3,000, right? So I'm like, this is unbelievable. I can text him. He'll text me back. Which is awesome because that's just all God. But in this book, Rick, he writes about people have goals. And goals are great. But goals are never going to get you to where you want to be. Goals will never be the standard. But what are you committed to reach those goals? So it's not about the goals. It's about the commitments. Then when you have the commitment to say, okay, my goal is, let's say I'm a D lineman. Hey, my goal is, I don't know, I want to have 8 sacks. All right, well, all right, then what's your commitment? Well, I'm going to commit every day, all right, to having a better stance. All right, well, then what's your standard? Then your standard is how do you measure it? How many times are you going to get in a better stance? Like, and so for in our program, that's what we've done now. Well, in life, when we wake up every day, it's great to have a goal, right? But are you committed to it? And then what is the standard as far as the substance that make up that commitment? And I think that's the things that we're doing right now. That's the vision that I have for our team and the mission I have for our team.
Well, that's good stuff, Josh. And listen, I wrote something down that you said to me, I don't know how many years ago, but you're a guy that you don't want your players to buy in. No. You want your players to trust in. Because when you buy into selling something, you end up selling out.
Well, just remember, when you buy a product, that product will always outdate itself. You got me? Because products come and go.
I got you.
Changes come and go, and circumstances come and go. But when you trust in something, it ain't got nothing to do with the value. It's got everything to do with the makeup.
Makeup, yeah. You know, Josh, that's something, and I want you to – we got a couple of minutes left here. I want you to tell us kind of where we are with Gainesville Red Elephant football, because I talked to you – at the end of one season, and you were disappointed. You were disappointed. Yep. We didn't meet the standard. Talk a little bit about where you are today.
Well, my first year here, you know, we go to the finals. We get beat by Langston Hughes, probably the best team in the state of Georgia, any classification. We play 58 seconds better. We probably win that game. So the next year we get beat in the quarterfinals. Two of our offensive players, our quarterback, running back, they go out within the first three drives. So we lose about 65% of our production on offense. So we lose in the quarterfinals. Well, you know, everybody in the community, 26-2. Hell, this is easy. You know, now we'll just go win it the next year. And maybe some of the kids were that way a little bit. I didn't feel like last year we had as much leadership, you know, and guys that were truly committed when adversity hit. I knew we were committed when we felt like, hey, this is, you know, we got a great chance here or whatever. But our schedule changed last year. We were on the road seven times last year, eight times, including the playoffs.
Yeah.
You're playing Carrollton. You're playing Milton. You're playing all these teams that won state championships the year before. And so for us, you know, that was the first time in 17 years that any team that I've ever coached got beat out in the first round. So,
yeah.
But we're desperate now. I mean, I told our guys, look, if we're going to own 2022 and we're going to own 2023, then we got to own 2024. And if we own it, then we'll earn the right to fix it. If we don't own it, we won't. And so our guys showing up every day working their tails off. And that don't mean they've learned it yet. That don't mean they've got it yet. That don't mean they've got the right formula yet. But they're working hard every day to get there. And I told them, look, we don't have to have it yet. But by the time we get to December, we're either going to regret what we didn't do or we're going to be proud of what we've done. So we got to decide which one we want when we show up every day and be committed to what we're doing. But I like our locker room. I like our staff. I like, you know, our community's all behind what we do here. We got a chance that if we can stay healthy and, you know, we do the little things right. You know, it's like football terms. You know, we're working on the mindset stuff. We're going to be right as far as that goes. You know, we got to get off the field on third down. That got us a little bit last year. You know, we got to start faster on offense. We scored points, but we need to score early. And then we got to be so good on special teams that we change the whole complexity of the game. So, you know, those are the things that we're working on. And then the other stuff that we've got to work on within the heart and the mind, we're working on also. So, I like this group, though, and I think they're fired up, and I think they're driven to want to be great, and they want to leave a legacy behind.
All right, Josh, in about 30 seconds, I want you to tell us what NIL does to you and your program there in Gainesville, Georgia.
Well, you know, in Georgia you can have NIL and for the athletes, but you can't have anything to do with it. Nobody affiliated with the school can have anything to do with it. They just got to report it. And, you know, we got a couple of guys on our team right now that are going to have a chance to make a lot of money when they go play. And so, you know, the NIL part of it, I think the thing that affects us more is the portal, you know. There's a lot of money out there. And, I mean, and you know, we try to educate our guys, but, you know, we talk about financial literacy, things like that. But you also want to educate the parents, too, that, you know, the most money may not also be the best fit. And I think that's the hardest part now, to try to decipher, to try to differentiate and discern, like, what's a good fit for my son, but also what's the best way that's going to help our family. And so, hey, God bless you guys. I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you. Love you guys, and go Big Red.
Josh, always good to hear from
always
everybody.
Always good to hear you.
I'm telling you, that's some good stuff. We're going to be talking with him throughout the year, we'll be following him for sure. All right, Josh Niblett, head football coach for the Red Elephants. Man, I'll tell you, good stuff in our Legend Series. All right, we take a timeout. When we come back, Coach Mark Lassiter has our Camp Grace segment right here on the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report.
This segment of the Thompson Tractor Prep Sports Report brought to you by Camp Grace. Now back to Coach Rick Cleveland.
Camp Grace is located in West Mobile as the summer home of Camp Rapahope, Camp Mash, Camp Smile, and Camp Sugar Falls, as well as the home of Outback Mobile, and is shared by many other community organizations throughout the Mobile area. Camp Grace is a place where God's love is bestowed freely upon others, the true definition of God's grace.
So last Monday, I got to do something that was really kind of cool. Just a brief history about our vehicles at our house. We have all old cars. I mean, we do. We got old cars. That's what we drive. And
for old people.
For old people, I guess. But we haven't had a new car around there in a long, long time. which is fine. I'm perfectly content. Well, about a year ago, Dad and I were talking. I was up in Birmingham visiting, and Dad said that his car that they have was a lease car, and it was going to be turned in this coming May, was be his last month, and it needed to go back in. And he said, you know, it'd be a good car if you want to buy it, you know. And I said, well, yeah, it's been garage kept, and they hadn't been anywhere. It hardly has any miles on it. So my wife and I said, well, let's just see how it goes in the next year. And if we need a car, we'll come see about it. Well, as they got closer to it, Michelle and I decided we were going to buy the car.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, Dad, we're going to buy it. And so, of course, Dad calls and he says, now look. And he gives me the rundown of all the things I need to do to take care of that car. Okay, same conversation he gave me when I was 16.
Yeah.
When I first started driving. That's fine. That's what daddies are supposed to do. But anyway, Dad talked to me about it. So I get up there Monday, and he and I get in a car, and we go over to the dealership where he's turning the car in. And there's a young man there who's already ready for us. He meets us there, and he comes and talks to me and about the car. And Dad basically has already worked the price out for the car, and everything's set. All I got to do is go in there and buy the car. So Dad and I are sitting there waiting. They were doing some paperwork, and he says, you know, son, I've had a car since 1952.
Yeah.
And he goes, this will be the first time that I've not owned a car since 1952. And he goes, it's kind of hard because I'm giving up more of my independence. And suddenly that car became more than a car.
Yeah.
It became something that my dad, without really, it's not the car, it's a car.
Yeah.
But it's a part of his life and a part of being independent, be able to get up and go and do whatever he wanted to do whenever he needed to do it.
Yeah.
You know, now it was like I am completely dependent on other people to take me to the doctor, take me here, take me there. I can't do it. I can't do it for your mama anymore.
Yeah.
And he goes, and he says, that's hard. That's hard to get used to. And he goes, but at the same time, I know when I get in the car, I can't hardly look up. You know, he's kind of, his neck's gotten a little stiff, and he kind of looks down. He doesn't look, can't look up and see as well.
Yeah.
And he goes, my reaction's not as fast. And he goes, so this is kind of hard. He goes, but if I'm going to give it up, I'm glad I'm giving it to my son. Man, you talk about just the wellspring of tears roll up in my eyes, and I'm sitting there, you know, talking to my dad, and you know, Dad is not the dad I remember when I was growing up in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. He's 89 now. He's not as, you know, when I was young, I can still remember seeing him jump up because I didn't have a hold of that dang fishing pole. And he jumped up, the bass bit, and took the pole and was going across the lake with it. And Dad runs up, dives in the water, and catches it. So I told you to hold that pole, son. Well, that's not the dad I see anymore.
Yeah.
But when he tells me, I'm glad I'm giving it to my son,
that's
still the dad I remember when I graduated high school, and he told me how proud I was, and I graduated college, and my children are born. And then he calls me Tuesday night, and he just says, I'm so glad you came and got that car. I really am. He goes, I got to tell you something. I want you to know how proud I am to be your daddy. And you know, I'm so lucky that I get to hear my dad say that to me today.
Yeah.
And it's something that so many times I look back through my life and I wish I had done more. You know, and I guess everybody's like that. But what a blessing that was, Rick. What a blessing it was to spend that day with him, getting that car, and then having some conversations with him in the car, some really tough conversations about his health, about how he feels, about where he is, where he and Mama are, you know, and where they are in their life, you know,
yeah,
coming toward the end of it.
Yeah.
And how hard that is for to listen to.
Yeah.
But I thank God today that I was given that opportunity. And too many times I don't think we take enough I know I don't. It's not a we, it's a me. Don't take enough time to really thank God for what he gives us and the opportunities he gives us and the chances he gives us, because he gave me an opportunity to spend some time with my dad that I could have missed. I could have missed, and yeah, I didn't. And I thank God for that today.
Well, you know, Mark, very few of us get the opportunity to have their dad tell them what your dad told you this week. Yeah. And every time we talk, you know, I think one of the things of what we talk about is how blessed and lucky you are to have your mom and daddy.
Yeah.
And but your daddy blessed you this week.
Boy, he did.
When he looked you in the eye and made that statement to you. And you know, there's a lot of people listen to these shows that still have their mamas and daddies. And if you didn't hear anything today from Josh Niblett or from our discussion, you just heard a 65-plus-year-old man tell you how happy he was to hear his daddy say what he said to him today. And that in itself makes 2 hours of fellowship worth every minute of it. And don't wreck the car, Mark.
Please.
If I'm not,
don't
if
wreck
I
the
do,
car.
If I do, Chris Garris, get ready. I'll be coming to see you.
Yeah. And please keep the oil changed in it.
Yeah, I will. Oh, he told me when to rotate the tires.
Yeah. Mark called and said, Dad just called and said, this is what he said. What a blessing it is. Listen, Randy, thank you. You don't know how much you miss this Saturday morning stuff. Yeah. You're not here.
That's right.
And I want to tell you this. No matter where you go, no matter what you do, he is always with you. God bless you. See you here same time, same place next week.